representing Contra Costa County, chair of the committee. Confirmation that we have a quorum?
We have a quorum.
Okay. Next on our agenda is the consent calendar. Is there any member wishing to remove an item? I have no requests from members of the public. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
There's a motion by Cortese, second by Dodd. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Next item is our regional programs, and this will be RM2 operating program update, and Christine will be giving this one.
Good morning. My name is Christina Verdin. I work in programming and allocations, and I'm the project manager for the regional Measure 2 operating program performance audits. And there it is. So MTC is charged with performing performance audits for RM2 operating projects. The legislation asks MTC to create standards, and we do. And this is the presentation regarding all of the funds that the commission has allocated for operating projects. We provide operating support for 12 projects. We create a budget and annually make allocations based on that budget. 38% of all RM2 revenues go to the operating project. And we did have a 1.5% annual escalation for operating projects. However, that was suspended in fiscal 708 because we weren't collecting enough money on the toll bridges. Trunkline projects are required to meet MTC adopted performance standards. This slide shows us how much money we've allocated since the inception of the program. Since 2004-05, we've allocated over $265 million to operating projects. To date, in 2012-13, we've allocated $37.1 million. So we're making a difference in the region, I think. This is the list of projects that I bring to you every year. The thing to note on this chart, however, is that for the trunkline projects at the top, it reads Dumbarton Bus. That was formerly Dumbarton Rail. We were allowed to change the legislation to read bus so that we could start interim bus service or fund interim bus service that's operated by the Dumbarton Committee. And that first allocation of bus funds went in 12-13. And another thing to note is that Clipper receives a total of $20 million altogether, and they have $1.5 million remaining at the start of fiscal 12-13. So this is a little matrix of the performance standards. We worked with the transit operators to create the performance standards. The first standard that these operations have to meet is a fare box recovery ratio that's by mode and type of service. So you'll note that ferry peak has a 40% fare box recovery, bus has 30%, and so on. The second standard is that they maintain a positive trend in service productivity. So we'd like to see an increase in passengers per hour, an uptick every year if we can. Standards also must be achieved by the third year of service. If standards aren't achieved, what happens is MTC staff consults with the project sponsor, and we ask the project sponsor to come up with a corrective action plan to help the service meet performance standards. If the standards aren't met, the legislation allows MTC to reassign the funds to another project, and the commission can vote to modify the project scope or the funding or reassign funding to another project. So now for the results. If you look at this chart, anything that's in green under 11-12 audited means that the operator achieved the fare box recovery ratio. On the right, you'll see little arrows going up and down, and green arrows means that they met the productivity standard, so they saw an uptick in passengers. We have two routes to call out here. The first is fast route 40. you'll see that they achieved a 28.4% fare box recovery standard. All of the routes on this particular chart are past the three-year ramp-up period. And this route was achieving a 30% fare box recovery standard when you did an average of 3 years in fiscal 9-10 and 10-11. Our fiscal 9-10. In 10-11, they started having issues, and we asked them to come up with a corrective action plan. So they were able to increase their passengers from 22.2% to 28.4%, but it was still just shy of the fare box recovery standard that they have to meet. They fell just short. The other line to call out is Napa Route 29. They made service changes that dramatically increased their ridership, but they can't reach the 30% fare box recovery standard. There's another line that's a local service that also runs along Route 29, the Route 10 service. And what Napa has discovered and has shown MTC is they have a justification for midday service on that route. The Route 10 passengers really, really wanted some kind of express bus service. So what Napa's doing is they're making the Route 29 an all-day service. So it will need next year to achieve a standard of 20% fare box recovery. Another thing to note on this chart is you'll see all the little red arrows going down for the AC Transit service. Their service productivity is going down. Fewer passengers are taking the service. However, they still achieve a very strong fare box recovery. So these are also services past the three-year ramp-up period, but these are for all-day services. So these services have to meet a 20% fare box recovery ratio. This is the chart that Napa will be on next year. If you look, you'll see that everything is green except for one route, and that's the Route 30Z-JPX. It's operated by WestCat, and they have achieved the fare box recovery standard in past years because we did a three-year averaging. What the three-year rolling average is it allows an accounting for market fluctuations. So it gives them a little extra time to go on ahead and meet the fare box recovery standard. So what you're seeing under 10-11 audited, 17.9, that's not what we reported to you. We reported to you the better number, which was the three-year average. But now these are the actual numbers of what this route is achieving. But what we would like to do is ask them to come up with a corrective action plan for the service. The AZ Transit Route NL didn't meet the productivity standard based on the three-year average. So they're seeing kind of a downtick in passengers. However, they met the fare box recovery target. And let's see, their fare box recovery target, did I lose them? The NL is actually an all-day service. There it is. It's a 28.2% fare box recovery target, which is very strong. So now we go on to the OWL services. They have to achieve a 10% fare box recovery target, and most of them are doing just fine. The only one that we're really concerned about at this time is Muni's OWL service, the Route 14 Mission service. What we've been doing is the three-year average with them as well to kind of buy them time to let the market recover for that service. However, we're concerned that it may not meet fare box recovery standards in the next year. You'll see that their service productivity is down. So now this chart shows the services that have to meet the standard in 13, 14, and beyond. LAFTA's rapid service needs to meet a 20% fare box recovery standard. They are currently at 11.2%. The Paragon Shopping Center outlet just opened up, and so they're hoping that that'll make their fare box recovery stronger in the coming years. They've also decreased their frequency from 12 minutes to 15 minutes. It was a little bit too much service, and so that decrease in frequency is going to help them save money, and it should brighten their fare box recovery outlook. Also, WEDA's South San Francisco ferry service, that 7.3% puts them in the yellow for reason for concern, but that's only a month's worth of data. That's their June data. They will get three full years to meet that fare box recovery standard, so they have until fiscal 14-15 to do that. So these are the three routes that are listed as not meeting the fare box recovery standards. And Route 40, what we want to note is that they've reduced their operating cost. They managed to streamline service without sacrificing revenue hours for passengers. They did work with Contra Costa County. That route goes from Solano County into Contra Costa County and serves the BART stations there. And so it delivers a lot of passengers to work in Contra Costa County. So what they did was they kind of realigned the bus service with those employers in mind. And this route is also going to get marketing money that's going to market all of the inner city express bus routes in Solano County. If you look in your packet behind the memo, you'll notice that there was a support letter from Solano Transportation Authority supporting this route. And let's see, so what will happen is when they have more marketing, we think that this will bounce back and come back to 30% because it did reach a 30% fare box recovery standard in the past. Regarding Napa's Highway 29 corridor service, they're having, they're adding midday service. We think that they can comfortably make a 20% fare box recovery. The WestCat 30Z, it needs to, we're using the three-year averaging method now. Its challenge is that part of its service is on the Highway 4 corridor, so there aren't any generators of passengers there. So it travels from Richmond to the county seat in Martinez, and along Highway 4, they can't pick up many passengers. So we're asking them to please come up with a corrective action plan to increase passengers on that service. So in closing, most operators have met the standards for fiscal 11-12, particularly in fare box recovery. We have some downtick in productivity for some of the AC transit lines, but they're doing fine. And the following are the action steps that we're taking for these services. So we think we should allow FAST to market the service through STA. Regarding Napa Route 29, once they implement midday service, they're expected to meet the 20% fare box recovery ratio. And we're going to work with WestCat on developing a corrective action plan to increase passengers on that route. And we're also going to continue to monitor the Muni Owl service and the Laughter Rapid to make sure that they achieve the standards. And this is an information item. Any recommendations for funding will be made when we come back in the spring with the RM2 operating program. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Christina. Any questions? Okay, I do have one public speaker, Jerry Grace.
Good morning, everybody. Can you please go back where you had a whole bunch of lists about the, all the buses?
Like
I don't know which one it was, but the question I wanted to know, what I'm hearing you say something about the money coming in to give you, how you can tell and how you know AC Transit get the money and who to give that to you or...
I can discuss that with you.
Okay, yeah, I think you better just tell everybody their business.
Yeah,
but
that's
what I wonder about. This is really strange to me. I don't know how they do it.
Okay. No, I can talk to you about the process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you again, Christina, for the update. We'll now move to our federal program, and this is BART car replacement project status update and funding request. This is MTC resolution number 3738 in Glenn. Giving us this update.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Glenn Tepke with the Programming and Allocations section. This item concerns the BART rail car replacement project. It has two parts. First, when the commission adopted the phase one funding plan for MTC support of this project, you asked that we periodically bring updates on the status of the project back to you, and we have one of those updates today from BART staff. The second piece is that we have a request from BART to withdraw funds from the exchange account that was established to help fund this project, and I'll be presenting that to you after the presentation from BART. So this morning we have Grace Cronican, the BART's general manager, and Paul Overseer, assistant general manager for operations, to provide you with that update.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and commission members. I'm Grace Cronican, General Manager at BART. As we all know, BART's plan to purchase a new generation of high-tech, environmentally friendly, and reliable train cars is a critical investment to the region's economic future. I want to begin today's presentation by thanking you, the members of MTC, for all of the support that you have given us. It's made a world of difference for us to have a partner like you in trying to fund these cars. With your significant support, we have lined up the funding and have hired Bombardier, Inc. to begin building 410 cars that are the product of the first phase of this investment for our rail fleet replacement program. After a lengthy and thorough review process, the BART board selected Bombardier in May. We believe they will deliver to the Bay Area taxpayers the greatest value based on reliability, safety, and price. As you will hear in the presentation that Paul Overseer is about to give you, BART will start receiving the new cars in December of 2016. That'll be in time for us to relieve a little bit of the capacity demands we have on the system and also to provide the cars for the new extension to San Jose. Increased capacity, faster trips, and added service are precisely what the region needs right now. As our ridership increases at at unanticipated rates. In FY13, we expect to carry 390,000 average daily riders. That's compared to last year's number of 367,000 weekday riders. And just for the record, in September and October, we cleared over 400,000 riders a day during weekday trips. BART currently runs about 86% of its fleet of rail cars daily. This is among the highest percentage of use of any transit agency in the nation. The remaining 14% are in preventative maintenance programs, being repaired or being improved with the new seat covers, the new floor replacements, and reconfigurations to allow for more passengers. We are here today to brief you about our progress and to answer your questions. We will come back for updates as time goes on. We look forward to continuing this rail car replacement partnership and to help work with us on planning phase two to ensure that we get at least 775 new cars total, which is necessary to carry the Bay Area into the next several decades. Paul?
Thank you, Grace. Members of the commission, my name is Paul Overseer. I'm BART's Assistant General Manager of Operations. Before you is page one of our presentation. This is the delivery schedule. We are currently in the 34-month engineering and design phase. This phase includes the development of mock-ups as well as system and subsystem qualification testing. The first major public milestone after this will occur with the delivery of the first of 10 pilot cars, and that is scheduled for March of 2015. We have an extensive 19-month pilot train test program, which is designed to ensure that before the production line at Bombardier is actually turned on, we have resolved as many issues as possible so that when the cars arrive on the property to go into revenue service, they are as reliable as can be. Production cars themselves begin to arrive at the end of 2016, and the 410th car of this order, the last car so far, would be delivered under the current schedule in 2020. Now, I say the current schedule because right now the schedule is based on a production rate and acceptance rate by BART of 10 cars per month. We're actually in discussions with Bombardier about upping that, and that has a number of different benefits. It helps us with the soft costs, and certainly it gets the cars here quicker. For example, if we can up the rate to 14 cars a month, it takes almost a year off of this delivery schedule. So we will be working on that in the future. The next page shows the final bid price for the 775-car contract from the three car builders that we told you last time we were here had been shortlisted. Now, I want to emphasize before we focus too much on price that price was one-third of the overall final score that was used to evaluate the car builders. Technical factors such as the car builder experience, their past performance on other contracts, their vehicle subsystem design constituted the other two-thirds of the overall evaluation score. Bombardier ended up with the highest technical score. They had the lowest price, as you can see, and thus they had the overall highest score. Their price, as you will note, was $184 million less than the second low bidder, Alstom, and their total price was $1.543 billion, which was about 25% below our engineer's estimate. And if you do the math, that works out. If we purchase all 775 cars, which we ultimately intend to do, that works out to just under $2 million per car. It should be noted that the way that Bombardier priced their proposal, the base order of 260 cars were priced at $2.4 million per car. And then there are four subsequent options, which takes you from the 260 up to the 775. They priced all of the 515 option cars at $1.8 million per car. Thus, the overall average of $1.99 million per car. Page 3 shows the overall budget distribution for the order that we have placed so far, that being the 260 base plus the first option for 150 cars for a total of 410. The total program budget is $1.384 billion. You'll note that engineering and project management costs, which are really the three middle bullets or squares up there, are about 11% of the total. I want to emphasize that many of these costs are front-loaded and really will be incurred irrespective of the size of the order. Engineering and design costs, for example, it doesn't really matter whether you're buying 50 cars or 500. You have to incur most of those costs. Were we to, or when we exercise all the other options to go up to 775 vehicles, these so-called soft costs will end up being about 5.8% of the total program budget. Escalation costs for the 410-car order are $140 million of the $266 million that you see listed up there under the category escalation slash contingency. The contract specifies the methodology that will be used for calculating escalation, and it is based on the actual rate of increase for certain industrial and labor cost indices. For budgeting purposes, we're using a 3% annual escalation rate, but I want to emphasize again that we will only pay the actual amount that's derived from these indices on an annual basis. I also want to point out the reason I'm spending time on this particular subject is that for a long-term contract such as this, escalation represents a significant risk to the car builder. We believe that the way that we remove that risk or address that risk in this contract contributed very much to the competitive prices that were bid, particularly by Bombardier. The next slide shows the funding plan for the 410-car order that we have placed so far. Thanks to the very competitive price proposal that we received from Bombardier, as well as with the help of MTC staff, we are able to leverage the $871 million in regional funds that was originally slated just to cover the base order of 200 cars. And we're able to stretch that funding to also cover the first option of an additional 150 cars. You'll also note that the 60 cars for the extension to Berryessa in Santa Clara County are paid for entirely by VTA. BART's share of the $1.4 billion budget for the 410 cars, as you can see, is $298 million, and the next slide shows you how we will generate that funding. It's primarily generated by annual allocations out of our operating budget to this project at a rate of approximately $45 million per year. Our SRTP includes this allocation, and provided that we hold our annual operating cost increases in check, and as long as our relatively conservative revenue forecasts are met, we will generate the necessary BART share of $298 million over the next 6 years. At the same time, we continue to look for other funding sources as a backstop to our primary plan, which is essentially to pay for this out of our operating budget. Page 6 is a summary of the current status of the project. Of note, Bombardier is already in the process of selecting and signing contracts with major subsystem suppliers, such as for doors, HVAC, propulsion, and automatic train control. Key program plans have been submitted and reviewed, and the engineering and design phase is well underway. Lastly, next steps. The revised Phase 1 MTC BART funding plan, which will reflect the actual bid price and the addition of the first option to Phase 1, will be before you in the spring. We are also working with our partners at VTA to expand a MOU that has already been signed for funding and to turn that into a legally binding full funding agreement. We hope to have that done actually before spring. We're shooting for the end of this year. And as we look further into the future, we will be working with your staff to develop the funding plan and resolution for the remaining 365 cars of this hoped-for 775-car order. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. Is there any questions of the BART staff? Commissioner Capos.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. And once again, I want to welcome the general manager to our meeting. I think it's exciting. This is certainly something that makes sense in terms of the need for the investment. I was just wondering if I could just get a little bit more information on some things, especially perhaps with the benefit of so many of the BART riders that may be interested in this item. Is there a maintenance plan that is connected to this purchase? And I'm wondering if you can just say a little bit about that.
We have already begun the transition to a new way of doing maintenance at BART. I'm proud to say that even with the oldest fleet in the country, two-thirds of our cars are over 40 years old. Last fiscal year, we achieved an all-time high figure for car reliability. Basically, our approach to maintenance is shifting from an emphasis on unscheduled maintenance to a real emphasis on maintenance, and we call that a real emphasis on scheduled maintenance. We call that our strategic maintenance program, and essentially the plan is to get to the various components and overhaul them, replace them on a regular basis, primarily a five-year cycle, before they have a chance to fail under our passenger. And the program is working well so far. We are also making a major investment in facilities. We're looking at a $370 million expansion of our Hayward maintenance facility, where we will do a lot of our secondary repair. That's funded partially by VTA, and that's the location where we plan to bring the cars in every 5 years and do essentially a mini overhaul of them so that we keep them in good working order.
And what is the lifespan in terms of these new cars? What are we projecting in terms of how long they would last or be in service?
Nobody would have ever thought that the current cars would be in service for 40 years and setting records for reliability at their 40th year. I believe the FTA standard is 30 years. I wouldn't want to speculate on how long these cars will be around, but as long as they're around, we will keep them in good order.
I certainly would want to see any information you have on maintenance. I think just having, if there's something in writing, I think that would just be helpful. I think that it's good that when we make this kind of investment that we think about how we preserve it and prolong the life of it as much as we can. I also was wondering if you can tell me, and I apologize for my ignorance, a little bit about the vendor and sort of what their track record or history has been.
Well, Bombardier is a Canadian firm. We are dealing with their subsidiary, Bombardier of North America. They, I believe, are the largest car builder in North America. They also build cars through their other subsidiaries for Europe and Asia. Quite honestly, of the three car builders that were shortlisted, generally I think if you talk to folks in the industry, Bombardier and Alstom are considered to be sort of top tier in terms of quality. If you'll note in our evaluation of the proposals where I told you that price was one-third of the overall score, that's because measures of reliability or surrogate measures for reliability were two-thirds of the score. We are absolutely fixated on the need to get reliable cars. The nature of the BART system is such that it is a very fault-intolerant system. Problems with the cars impact all the lines very quickly, impact thousands of people within a few minutes. And so there was a real focus in this process on identifying the proposal that we felt offered the highest level of reliability, and that ended up being Bombardier.
And then just a final question. When you talked about one of the slides, I think it was number 3, you had that figure of escalation contingency, and it was $266 million. And I think you mentioned that $144 was escalation. In terms of contingency, what exactly is that? So how does that work?
It's just what it implies. It's contingency. It's a long program. It's a technically complicated program. There are a lot of things that potentially can go wrong. We've looked at other car contracts of this magnitude and complexity throughout North America. And I believe that our contingency percentage here is about 9%. That pretty much falls within the norm. Our job is to not have to use that, but nonetheless, it's important that we have that funding available for any issues that arise.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, and maybe this kind of touches to where Commissioner Campos and some of the questions he was answering, the answers you were giving. You said you hope to have the cars come in somewhere around $2 million. Is that what I heard?
No, that's the bid price.
Okay, $2 million a car?
Yes, if we purchase, there's a quantity discount.
Right.
So if we only, for example, were to purchase the base order, which we've already exceeded, the price per car is $2.4 million. The way Bombardier structured their bid, all the option cars, option 1 through 4, are priced at $1.8 million. And essentially that's because the engineering and design costs are front-loaded and they want to pay for their cost in the base order.
So the first 410 million, or the first 410 cars are somewhere a little over $3 million, correct?
No, they're somewhere in terms of the contract cost. The cost of the first 260 is $2.4 million, and then the cost of the other 150 is $1.8 million.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get your math where you show 410 cars at $1.3 billion, or maybe $1.4 billion. That's why the math isn't working for me, and that's why I'm trying to help myself through this.
Okay, well, I think we have to, maybe we didn't make the distinction between contract cost and program cost clear, and that's really what page 3 is about. It shows you the 19%, the new car procurement is $974 million. That's essentially the money that goes to Bombardier. And then the other four bullets below that are the remaining components of the overall program cost. So I think where there's maybe a little bit of clarity needed is the difference between what goes to Bombardier and then the overall program cost.
So if you took total program cost, total cost,
yeah,
and divided by the amount of cars you're getting, you're not going to be anywhere near that $2 million.
No, it'll be above that.
Like $3
million. I don't think it's quite $3 million, but
I guess it depends if you go beyond the 410 cars is when it will start dropping, but up front.
That's exactly true, because just like the car builder has upfront one-time...
No, I get that. It takes a lot to design a car, and once you've designed it and once it's working, it's easy to make them.
Right, and we have the same situation. We have a lot of upfront costs, again, also associated with design and engineering, that once those costs are extinguished, then our costs go down on a per-unit basis as well. That's why if we were to award the full contract, or once we award the full contract for 775 cars, the so-called soft costs end up being about 5.8% of that total contract.
Just one last question, Mr. Chairman. What happens to the old cars? Is there a scrap? I mean, are they of any value?
We're actually working on a plan as to what we do with the old cars. We're obviously interested in doing what's right environmentally, but also maximizing what we get out of them. And they're aluminum. They're worth something.
Okay. And who gets that money?
That's something that who gets that money?
I'm just desperately trying to get the general manager to smile a little, so.
She gets it.
I don't know what MTC put in the cars that are going to be dismantled. We could look at that and see if there's a proportionate return, or we could just deliver those cars over here and you guys could take care of a certain percentage of them.
Well, we could do what we do with our school bus programs and send the dirty diesel buses down to Mexico.
Unfortunately, these are unique cars, and I don't even think they'd fit in Mexico.
Thank you. Commissioner Bates.
Could you remind me again about the construction? As I recall, they were going to be assembled in the Midwest. Is that right?
No, East Coast.
East Coast.
Alstom and Bombardier both have their final assembly plants in upstate New York, and Rotem is in Philadelphia.
Okay. That's what I recall. I just don't remember the place. But so they will be actually manufactured there or assembled there, or how does that work?
Well, the final assembly, as defined by FTA, which is essentially they take the car shell and they put the various components on the vehicles, that takes place upstate New York.
So as I recall, I mean, and I may be incorrect about this, but isn't our cars, aren't they designed for a track that no other agency in the world has besides ourselves? So that's why a lot of our costs are so high?
That's essentially correct. There's a couple. If you look far and wide, you can find one agency in South America that has our gauge. And
that's what we can do with those old cars.
That's not right.
Yeah, if I could, I mean, BART cars are one-off in a number of different ways. Gauge is certainly one of them.
Uh-huh.
Their lightweight is another major difference between us and a standard railway car. Subway car, their performance, their acceleration, deceleration rates tend to be higher than most. The top speed is higher than most. The voltage is higher than most. It just goes on and on in terms of why these cars end up, unfortunately, being not an off-the-shelf project.
If they were off-the-shelf, how much would we anticipate saving?
Well, I have to say we were very pleased with the bids that we got. It is, you know, if you compare these bids with other bids, it's a little higher, a couple hundred thousand dollars higher per car. But
you'd think with the number of cars in the bid would influence some of the costs, the soft costs.
Right, and the quantity discount is significant. I mean, the difference between paying, you know, $2.4 million per car and $1.8 million per car as you buy more and more of these vehicles, that's a real savings to us.
So once we have all the cars purchased, what percentage of that would be of our fleet, car fleet?
I'm sorry?
So once we get all of the 700 cars, it's assuming we have that, what percentage is that of the overall cars that we have on the
Right now we have 669 cars.
Okay,
so essentially we're replacing the whole fleet. We're not sure we're going to stop there.
Right, but we'll come back and talk to you about that another time.
Okay.
I would like to put on the record back to an earlier question you had about where the cars are manufactured. I think it's important to put on the record that it's a 66% domestic content. So, and we got to that due to the help the legislature provided us, which really was an asset that we went up from 60, we believe, to 66% domestic content. In addition to that, final assembly will be in New York, as Paul indicated, and anything that's shipped is shipped under the Jones Act, and so it'll be a U.S. carrier, which amounts to a lot when you have parts coming from other places. I think that there's a fair amount of domestic product here to be proud of.
Okay, and I just want to congratulate you on the upgrades. As I see the, you know, as I'm a BART rider, and when I go to San Francisco, it's amazing if you're on one of the cars that hasn't been upgraded, the noise level is substantially higher. And when you get on another one that's actually been improved, it's substantially lower. So I want to encourage you to convert as many as you can, upgrade as many as you can.
Thank you.
Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not trying to prolong this, but Commissioner Bates certainly touched on something that's very important, and that's, I mean, we appreciate the Buy America stuff, but it would have been great if it was Buy Bay Area. Do you think there would be any chance in getting Bombardier to maybe do, if they need to hire a bunch of people to do some sort of a job fair out here in the Bay Area? You know, there are some people that are out of jobs and may be willing to relocate, and it might be nice if we were able to get some Bay Area people working on this project.
I think at this point, given that the contract has been awarded, it would absolutely be appropriate to have those discussions with them.
I certainly would appreciate that because, you know, there's a lot of people out of work from NUMMI that have understanding on how to manufacture things, and they could probably provide great help, and it sure beats being unemployed. I mean, I don't know what's better, being unemployed or living in New York, but I'm not a New York guy. But I think it would be great if we could maybe try to get some people placed in jobs there.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments from commissioners? I do have one public speaker, Jerry.
You know one thing you guys forgot about? I know Grace and Paul know about this. They had a party out here, and you know what I'm talking about. Do you guys know?
No, I don't know, Jerry.
Well, 40 years birthday. You forgot this is their 40 years.
Okay.
But well, shame on you guys.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Thank you for the reminder. Well, first off, Grace and Paul, happy birthday. And again, we do want to thank you for the presentation. This was certainly insightful and fills us in on a number of things that I think has roused our curiosity. And I want to agree with Commissioner Bates in terms of the upgrades that you have done to some of the fleet there. It's really noticeable. So thank you. Glenn, do you have more here?
Yes, quickly, there is an action part to this item, and that is an amendment to MTC Resolution 3738 that establishes the funding exchange account between MTC and BART that helps fund future costs for the project. Under this agreement, MTC programs federal funds to BART's preventive maintenance costs, which are costs that otherwise would have been funded with BART's local funds. Then BART deposits an equal amount of local funds into this account for future project costs. Those deposits, or rather that programming, is part of the $871 million commitment to phase one of the project that Paul mentioned in his presentation. And I just want to clarify that funding commitment was for the replacement cars, the 60 cars for the Berryessa extension that are included in the initial contract are funded separately. So this item updates the agreement to incorporate about $50 million that we have programmed over the last two fiscal years to BART's preventive maintenance costs, and also to authorize BART to withdraw up to $15.5 million from the exchange account to help meet project costs. The project expenditures through December are projected to total about $130 million. That includes a $90 million progress payment, approximately $90 million, to Bombardier that is due in December. And BART has requested this withdrawal to help them meet those expenses. The BART board also approved this request at their meeting last week. So we are recommending authorizing that withdrawal. It does raise a few issues that we will be working on and bringing back to you. One is updating that phase one funding agreement. As Paul mentioned, it was originally anticipated to cover the cost of 200 cars. The initial contract is for 350 replacement cars. We need to update the agreement to reflect that. We are not expecting any increase in MTC's commitment to the project, both because the cost per car is lower than was anticipated at the time that we did the agreement, also because BART has committed more funding to phase one of the project. The second issue is that at the time we developed the funding plan, we were not anticipating needing to withdraw funds from the exchange account until FY 2017. So we need to work with BART to update the cash flow projections for the project and plan the timing of MTC's contributions so that we help meet the expenditure needs for the project while at the same time maximizing the earnings on the exchange account, because those earnings will help fund the project. And then the third issue is that there have been some delays in BART's deposits of the local funds into the exchange account. We want to address that and come up with a revision to the agreement that establishes an enforcement mechanism to ensure that those deposits are made in a timely way. And we'll bring all of those items back to you within the next few months as further amendments to these resolutions. So with that, staff recommends that the committee refer MTC Resolution 3738 revised to the commission.
Thank you, Glenn. Grace, did you have some comments?
I just wanted to make clear for the public record, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The BART board has not actually, they take action tomorrow. I think Glenn mentioned that they already took action. They know of everything that's in this packet, and they've been briefed and taken action to approve the cars. That their financial votes tomorrow, though, just for the record.
Thank you for the clarity. Commissioner Dodd.
Yeah, I'm sorry for being so late to the party here. I've been looking at this and just trying to figure it out. Can you help me understand? I know it's only 5% of the cost of the total program, but where $69 million was spent for BART project management on this?
That will cover everything from what we've already been through in terms of the staff that has been working on this project up to this point, engineering staff involved in the design process at one extreme to the other extreme. That covers the train operators, I believe, at the maximum, when the contract is at its maximum delivery rate. We will have as many as 7 train operators assigned to testing these vehicles as part of our acceptance process for quite a period of time. And then a lot of people in between, project management, warranty administration, inspectors at not only the final assembly plant, but at some of the key subsystem plants. So it covers a plethora of personnel. I would just, you know, say that, you know, soft costs are a sensitive subject, but we have seen a number of car contracts, most recently in Chicago, where there were major issues where they literally had to pull the cars off the line, and you can go back and sort of dissect what went wrong with those new cars, and it goes back to the agency not staffing the project properly, not having the right inspectors at the right places during the production process. So it covers a lot of different things. I just gave you a couple of examples of what's included.
I appreciate the description there, and I guess I'm going to ask our staff, because, you know, we're not expert in this. Is this the standard in, you know, the industry, the allocating these costs this way? I mean, do we understand that this is how it's done in Chicago and New York and Washington, D.C., and other places, to make sure that we're this is standard operating procedure?
It is standard operating procedure to include the staff costs for managing and developing a capital project as part of the capital cost of the project.
I guess I would just note, too, that this is over the 10-year period of the project. It's the entire program.
Yes.
And I believe a 5% for that purpose is within range.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the answers.
Okay. If there's no other questions before us, is MTC Resolution 3738 revised? Is there a motion to move forward? A motion by Campos?
Seconded.
Second by Cortese. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you once again. So our next item on the agenda is California Transportation Commission update, and that will be delivered by Alex Baumann.
Thank you, Commissioner. There is a summary report in your packet for the October 24th meeting. It was a relatively light meeting, so I'd be glad to answer any questions. We did get an allocation for an important Port of Oakland project of $65 million, so that's probably worth noting through the Trade Corridor Program. But other than that, I'll just take any questions you have.
Seeing no questions, this meeting stands adjourned.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry.
One quick announcement. For those of you who have a religious leader of your choice, if you could get with them and maybe pray a little bit. Measure B one right now in Alameda County saw an explosion in votes yesterday and went from 65.79 to 66.19, which we know is a little short. And so if you all would just, we got about 17, 18,000 more ballots to count. So if you would just fall on your knees and pray for us, we would really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good luck on that, Scott. We are adjourned.